Happy Wednesday, everyone. Andrew Wiebe here with a little change-up in your normal podcast routine. We'll be back on Thursday with another episode of Extra Time, driven by Continental. But in the meantime, settle in for the second episode of the Movement Podcast, hosted by Kaylin Carr and produced by Extra Time legend Nick Fershaw. The show focuses on a singular, timely topic, the value of a vote. Kaylin goes to Pennsylvania to explore how the Black Players for Change and the Philadelphia Union teamed up to open Subaru Park as a three-day voter service center and met with some opposition in the process. It's a powerful, important listen. Enjoy, and we'll see you right back here at 5 p.m. on Thursday.
All right. I am here in Chester, Pennsylvania. I've driven out here this morning from Brooklyn, and I'm seeing a pretty good turnout here at the voter service center at Subaru Park, the stadium of the Philadelphia Union, where it looks like there is a good number of people just walking out. I'm seeing signs saying I voted stickers, and I'm hoping to meet up with Warren Crivell and Mark McKenzie of the Union to hear a little bit more about their work to open up the stadium and check this out.
So I saw you pulling up. Ray said, "There go your boy." I said, "Who?" He said, "Oh, there goes Kaylin." So if Mark was ready, and we all hopped in our respective cars and cruised on over to see a parking lot fairly full with cars. A lot of volunteers and a bit of foot traffic for the pop-up polling site. Collectively, across leagues, across different sports, I think that was a big point of emphasis that, athletes wanted to make happen. Ownership, they have these big stadiums, and if they can be a resource to help the community. We've seen these crazy, long lines at different polling stations. We've seen the voter suppression that's taken place, and if we're able to ease some of that, by opening up our respective stadiums, why not?
Based on the award-winning video series, this is The Movement, the podcast on North American soccer culture. I'm your host, Kaylin Carr. And on this episode, we'll examine how the Black Players for Change organization, the MLSPA, MLS clubs, and the league itself have come together to encourage people to vote in the upcoming 2020 presidential election, resulting in the launch of the nonpartisan campaign, MLS Unites to Vote. With just over 2 weeks left before the election on November 3rd, I drove out from my apartment in Brooklyn to the battleground state of Pennsylvania to meet up with Philadelphia Union players Mark McKenzie and Warren Crivell. I meet up at the Philadelphia Union Stadium in Chester, PA, turned into a three-day pop-up election service center for citizens to register, drop off their mail-in ballot, or vote.
I have fun with these guys every game. I do. I try to anyway. I do. They have awesome personalities.
Yeah. Awesome.
This is Lorraine Price, a security guard at the Union Stadium, and one of the first faces you'd see at any normal Philadelphia Union match. On the day I visited, though, she was one of the first faces people saw before they cast their vote.
They said all weekend they've had about 6-7 people. Today, oh, yeah. They've been flooded since the gates opened.
Cool.
So at least people are getting out and voting. That's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
Lorraine instantly recognized Philadelphia Union defender Mark McKenzie, and she was not the only one. Mark has emerged as one of the best center backs in MLS this year. And still at just 21 years old, European suitors are interested too. I've seen Mark grow on the field as well as off, using his voice and role with the Black Players for Change organization to start conversations with union ownership about important initiatives like providing residents of Chester a place to vote.
Why not open up? We have plenty of space. We have plenty of space. We have the resources. We have the connections, to make it happen.
This year's election will likely impact every American, including these MLS players. And there's been an unprecedented push to participate in the democratic process I haven't seen in my 15 years in this league.
first as a player, and now in the media.
Hey guys, Kai Kamara here, Minnesota United. November 3rd is coming. That's right, the election.
Hey Tennessee, it's Dax McCarty with Nashville SC here.
Let's go out there, let's vote.
What's up guys, Griffin Yao here. Just wanted to inform you guys that the general election is coming up on November 3rd.
Today is voter registration day, so we would encourage all our fans to make sure they're registered to vote.
Hey everyone, this is Sean Davis, midfielder for the New York Red Bulls. The general election is November 3rd.
What's up, y'all? I'm Akosi Burgess of FC Dallas. And with just over 2 weeks left until the general election, make sure you get out and vote.
We're not just talking about the presidential election. We're talking about citywide, you know, council, mayors, governors.
Just get out there, get our votes, use that same energy we use for protest.
We can't expect change if we don't take our own initiative. So if you want your voice heard, just like me and everybody else that's voting, you got to get out and do the same.
Elections are coming up quick, and it's important for everybody to vote.
Make sure you go vote. Thanks, guys.
Go out there and cast our votes in numbers. Let's go.
Sadly, this energy to get people to vote has been met with pushback in some parts of the country. And this includes the Union Stadium in Chester. Just a matter of days before I was set to drive there, a lawsuit seeking an emergency injunction was filed, citing a, quote, lack of public input into the location of the pop-up voter service center in Delaware County. According to the latest census data, Chester, Pennsylvania, the site of the Union Stadium, is over 70% black.
A group of Delaware County GOP members filed an emergency injunction to prevent the site from opening, stating the heavily Democratic district. However, a judge sided with the election board and the site opened yesterday.
This is Philadelphia Union President Tim McDermott.
Anybody can come, regardless of political party. We're open and we're happy to be participating in an important election year. Thank you very much.
And this is Philadelphia Union midfielder Warren Craval, who I sat with alongside Mark McKenzie and interviewed through our masks and separate mics in the Subaru Park stands.
If your vote didn't matter, you know, the ominous day, they wouldn't be working so hard to suppress your vote. Voter suppression wouldn't be a thing. You can say that it's nonpartisan, but at the end of the day, the actions and, you know, the outcomes will tell you a different story.
Conversations around sports and politics, specifically in the North American soccer community, have been growing, especially over the past 4 years. My hope here is to take you a step further into some of these conversations that have led to this election year and this moment in sports, and expose you to some people and perspectives that you may not have heard from before, and to better understand what the power of the right to vote means and why it matters so much now. I've been reflecting back on my early days as a player in MLS and where this country was then. And I'll never forget being there, feeling a part of history. And those first two words.
Hello, Chicago!
The year was 2008, November 4th to be exact, at the election night rally just off Lakeshore Drive in Grant Park in Chicago, witnessing Barack Obama speak after being elected the 44th president of the United States. I remember rushing to get to Grant Park. Well, as best I could. I was on crutches after tearing my ACL earlier that year, with my former teammate and friend from the Chicago Fire, former defender, Deshaun Robinson.
You know, leading up to that night, you know, all right, is it going to happen? Is it going to happen? Could it actually happen? And then it happened. And it was like, Barack is the president. And it was like, what? There were so many people there in the streets walking, you know, hanging out their cars, honking horns.
I remember also leaving and kind of crutching out of there. And there was this moment where, you know, the streets were blocked down. I think we're on Michigan Avenue. And I just remember being like, you know, it was like black people, brown people, white people, kind of everybody singing the national anthem. And I think, you know, if we're really being critical, it wasn't this transformative moment necessarily in the way that it sort of alleviated all of the social ills or things that, you know, we faced as a country. But I think for that moment in time, at least, and for the prospect of it, and even beyond a little bit of the symbolism, kind of that coming together itself was something that was really powerful.
I think it just showed us, you know, if I look back on it right now, it showed me that, you know, almost anything is possible. It really is.
With less than 2 weeks until the election, I called Daesan, now a PE teacher at a charter school on Chicago's West Side, to reflect on that night. But even after that experience in 08, Daesan told me that he was still undecided in 2020.
Yeah, man, I'm registered to vote, man. I'm registered to vote. I'm neither Democrat or Republican. To be honest, I'm just be honest with you. I am looking at both candidates and what they stand for. That's where I'm at, to be honest. Obviously, there's things on both sides, bro. I don't necessarily agree with. And so it's up for debate right now.
Interesting. I feel like there's like this has become politics in general, and I feel like this sort of election cycle has become so polar. To hear you sort of in the middle, especially, or undecided at least, when I also know you and have, you know, spent a lot of time and gone to the election and all these things like that, it just goes to show that you don't necessarily know maybe where everybody is and what motivations they have behind it.
Yeah, don't come for me, you know, because I'm not for either side. I'm not for either side.
I got you.
I'm not for either side, you know.
Conversations like these, whether in locker rooms today or with former teammates now, can be both inspiring and uncomfortable, sometimes at once. That's a relatively new idea for Houston Dynamo midfielder Nico Hansen, who was born in Randers, Denmark, and moved to the U.S. as a child.
I moved here from Denmark when I was 10, coming from a place where opinions are, for the most part, the same. And I think I look back on my time in Denmark, and I always think back, like, why was my life so almost much more comfortable there? The people there are kind of have the same path. And I think, yeah, there's differing opinions, but for the most part, people are on the same path in that life. And I think coming here, you learn there's a different culture here in the U.S. It's tough because it's also Texas, and that also comes with very strong views on the opposite side. You know, even I looked at the other day, we had a post up. I was wearing the Black Lives Matter masks, and, you know, people on there are saying, just play soccer, you know, don't have opinions, don't do political things. And it's like, what is bothering you about this?
Houston is now ground zero in a series of long-running fights over voting rights. Texas is just one of 9 states to refuse to offer online registration, and one of just 5 states that won't accept concerns about the coronavirus as an excuse to vote by mail. In fact, if you're anywhere in the state of Texas, if you're under 65, not disabled, and not out of the county or in jail, you can only vote by physically casting your vote in person. During a pandemic, this has become especially dangerous. I asked Nico, the team representative for the BPC, about his work alongside the Dynamo and the NWSL's Houston Dash, who share an open-air stadium in East Downtown Harris County, to change that.
Yeah, we've been helping with the voter turnout by working with the club on getting BBVA as a polling place. And we're really excited that that's come to fruition. And you're always going to have critics, you know? And so the fact that we do have it open for BBVA to be open for a polling place is great. And I think that if people are going to be upset about the things that I'm wearing, then go vote, you know? Or if people are going to be upset about us kneeling, then, you know, you go make your voice be heard. And that's fine. It's just going to be awesome to help people find somewhere to go and vote and get more people out there and voting.
I come here to urge every person under the sound of my voice to go to the polls on the 3rd of November and vote your convictions.
This effort to suppress voter turnout, sadly, is nothing new in Texas. 1964 saw the introduction of a national campaign around voter security called Operation Eagle Eye, placing around 100,000 poll watchers in precincts around the nation. primarily focused in large cities with working class voters and high concentrations of black and brown people. An estimated 10,000 of those poll watchers were stationed in Texas, and in Harris County, flyers were passed around by the previously non-existent organization called the Harris County Negro Protective Association that, according to Texas Monthly, warned black voters that they could be arrested for voting if they had even so much as been questioned by police for any offense, including a simple traffic stop.
Mind, dear friends, your vote is precious, almost sacred. It is the most powerful nonviolent tool we have to create a more perfect union.
That's the voice of the late John Lewis, an icon of the civil rights movement, who went on to become a U.S. congressman, inextricably linked to voting rights, as one of the driving forces behind the 1965 Voting Rights Act. In 2013, the Supreme Court effectively struck down the heart of the Voting Rights Act by a 5-4 vote, freeing 9 states, including Texas, and scores of counties and municipalities, including Brooklyn, Manhattan, and the Bronx, to change their election laws without federal approval, leading to many of the issues we see now.
They're changing the rules. I've seen this before. I lived this before. Too many people struggled, suffered, and died to make it possible for every American to exercise their right to vote.
When he marched on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama in 1963, he was joined by a group of peaceful protesters, including a man named Stature Rogers, a military veteran and U.S. postal worker, on a day that would become known in history as Bloody Sunday.
Yeah, Stature Rogers, I think he is a previous version of myself. He was an athlete, super vocal in his community, really cared about everything that was going on around him and wanted to be a leader and wanted to create change.
That's the voice of Stature Rogers' grandson, Teddy Phillips, a prominent Seattle-based artist and Seattle Sounders fan who has collaborated with the team this year to design the team's Black Lives Matter armband that Nico Ladero wears and the team's vote campaign in the build-up to the election. Teddy has gained national attention this summer for his Just a Series of paintings, vibrant, colorful portraits he's created of Black people who have been killed by the police or others, like George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, or Ahmaud Arbery this past year.
Growing up in the South, like, we didn't have soccer at all. Coming here, we didn't have a basketball team. So I was looking at all the sports teams, and there was a guy at work who was super, super interested in the Sounders, and he was like a huge fanatic. So he would throw me tickets to go to the game sometimes. And then the MLS Cup came up, and I was like, shit, let's go, man. We're probably going to win this thing. We won, and I was like, okay, cool. So the whole social justice thing and my platform was growing. I said, maybe I can work with a team that kind of gets it.
Teddy goes by the name Stat the Artist as an homage to his grandfather. This is Stat on the legacy of his grandfather, Stature, to him.
When does South Carolina State was an activist on campus and went with his friends to go protest behind Martin Luther King and Bloody Sunday. And just taking that energy back into his community, going in, serving his country, and to come back and still not experience the quality that he was actually fighting for.
I guess it kind of leads me to my next question of this balance of so much of what I've seen this summer has been about kind of taking to the streets and demanding justice or making our voices heard. How do you see that balance between mobilizing and community direct action, protests, and demanding more of our system on the streets, as well as using your voice within the system through voting and the election to try and make change?
Every person has a vote to show up, and a lot of people don't think their vote counts. And there's a lot of animosity towards voting. A lot of people feel defeated with the entire voting process, but just educating people on, look, you have elected officials that could have prosecuted or pushed for more prosecution on the Breonna Taylor case, but we weren't voting those people in to actually get that job done. Public officials work for us. It's not the other way around. Just fighting for justice and using the Sounders platform to advocate for social change.
Further south,
in San Jose, California, is a former player I've long admired and someone I've grown to consider a friend over the years, now working in soccer media. Former U.S. Women's National Team defender and U.S. Olympian, Danielle Slayton. Almost 2 years ago, I'd asked Danielle if she'd be open to not only moderating MLS's Black History Month roundtable, but sharing some of her own experiences as one of the few high-profile Black women in North American soccer media. This is Danielle from that MLS Black History Month roundtable held in San Jose, California, in 2019.
This is a small thing, but this just happened to me yesterday. So I was covering men's national team game, and it's on Fox, and I was like, yes, I am wearing my hair curly.
Yes, boo, yes. Let you do what you gotta do. Don't let anybody tell you nothing.
I recently called Danielle to catch up on this moment in sports and politics.
To me, sport has always been political. It's interesting. You look back at the beginning of the Olympics. I mean, literally, countries are playing against countries. It's political, if you ask me.
This current moment of athlete activism, or as some would put it, the politicization of sports, is not a novel phenomenon. Most Americans have forgotten that sport has always been acceptable as political battleground. It's just that the rules of the game changed when integration and gender equity began to appear in professional sports, namely, when Black Americans and women were finally allowed to play.
The United States leads the Olympics in medal awards and is just about supreme in the sprint races, thanks to men like Tommy Smith and John Carlos.
I spoke to Danielle on October 16th, exactly 52 years to the day when U.S. track and field heroes Tommy Smith and John Carlos stood on the podium to receive their Olympic gold and bronze medals, respectively, for the 200-meter race during the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City.
Yesterday, they came in first and third in the 200-meter dash, and then stood on the victory platform with bowed heads, wearing black socks and gloves in a racial protest.
This historic moment carries a deeply personal meaning to Danielle.
My dad ran track at San Jose State, where both Tommy Smith and John Carlos ran in college. So they were college buddies, college teammates. When I hear my dad talk about his college buddies or when they get together for reunions, like, these are the guys that are getting together. So these are the gentlemen who have been a part of my life. These are the stories and the family lore I grew up being raised with.
The Negro athletes wear buttons reading Olympic Project for Human Rights. There were some boos in the stadium last night.
The second they walked off that stand, they were kicked out of the Olympic Village and kicked out of the Olympics by the USOC. They came back and received death threats, could not get hired for jobs. And it was a real challenge to get by when they had used their platform to speak up against racial injustice in the 60s. And so it was maybe even harder to stand up on that medal stand than we even realized.
That's interesting because I've seen a bunch of the criticism of athletes and specifically Black athletes to say, oh, well, what are you doing by kneeling? Or what are you doing by wearing this t-shirt or this face mask in this time? I think there's sort of like this tension between political statements or expressions historically, and then also this other side of like, well, what are you going to do? Or what comes from that? How do you navigate that tension or that balance?
The first thing is, as athletes, realizing that you have a platform and a voice and figuring out what your voice is in all of this. So what do I stand for? What do I believe? What is this about?
Do you think you represented all Black athletes in doing this?
I can say I represented Black America.
And then how can I use this platform and use my voice to actually make change in the areas that I care about? So now what do I care about? Oh, I care about voting. I care about that, you know, everyone has an equal opportunity to cast their ballot if they are over the age of 18. Great. How can I use my platform to move that piece forward?
Person I decided to reach out to when we started this project was FC Cincinnati forward Ray Ortiz, a 23-year-old Mexican-American rookie who was drafted as the 29th pick in MLS this year.
I was in the kitchen. I was like, I think I was like flipping some tortillas. My auntie told me to go flip or something. Like I was like in the kitchen. And then I get a call from one of my buddies. He was like, dude, congrats on getting drafted. So I didn't even know that I had gotten drafted until he had called me because they just simply like put up the list.
I met Ray while moderating the Rookie Symposium just a week later, a 3-day event in Orlando hosted by MLS's Player Engagement Department, designed to help rookies and homegrown players adjust to life in MLS. Ray has the talent to be on a first-team roster in MLS. That much is clear. He has spent the year, though, on loan from FC Cincinnati this season at the USL side, Charlotte Independence, where he helped the team make a run to the quarterfinals of the USL playoffs. What I didn't know when we first met, but learned after staying in touch since that first meeting at the Rookie Symposium, is that Ray is undocumented.
Well, it just makes a lot of stuff harder, because if I did have a green card, it would be easier to take up a roster spot rather than taking up an international spot where you have to perform because, man, you only have 6 of them or 7 of them. Having an international roster spot comes with pressure. And it's tough because I am a rookie in the league, but also have an international roster spot that people literally pay millions of dollars to obtain an international player.
When you think about your experience, your story, and I guess the place of how your experience fits in with others, do you identify with being a dreamer or that term?
Yeah.
What does being a dreamer, what does that mean to you?
What does being a dreamer mean to me? I think that's a hard question, because when I first applied to get my Dreamers Act, it was kind of like you kind of have to keep it in the shadow because of how people were viewing people like me, dreamers. My mother was scared. She always told me like to be careful, you know, at the store, at the park. If I wanted something, to not steal it or to not take it or to not even look somewhat suspicious. At the start of it, I was very skeptical and I was kind of confused as in why. Like, why was it so bad to be a dreamer? You know, I felt like I kind of was put into this bubble with, you know, millions of other kids that came to the United States at a young age. And we lost, like, kind of a part of ourselves.
Dreamers, as they're commonly referred to, is an acronym for Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors. It refers to DACA, another acronym, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. Basically, kids that have arrived here in the U.S. illegally, but at an age below 16, but usually much younger, where the parents make the decision and it's not the kid's choice. An executive order signed in 2012 by President Obama, designed to shield young people, like Ray, who've grown up here, from being deported, and allowing them to do simple things, like register for youth soccer, where Ray was eventually selected for the U15 U.S. youth national team, and to create a pathway or a possibility to attend higher education, as Ray did at the University of Portland, and legally work, in Ray's case, for FC Cincinnati and Major League Soccer.
There's always an argument that comes up with people with dreamers. We come to this country and we take people's jobs and we reap benefits, like if the United States was this big tree of fruit and we come and we just take fruit and never plant any seeds, you know? What people don't know is, like, we do pay taxes. We pay a lot of taxes. And not only that, we don't receive any federal funding. We don't, you know, kids could go to school, they receive FAFSA. I cannot receive that. I could ask for a loan, but even that is taxed at a higher rate because I'm an international student. Even though I've started kindergarten here, I started middle school, I went to high school here, and I put in so much into the community, but I don't get anything back.
And while the election looms, and most are being reminded to register to vote, dreamers, like Ray, are being encouraged, if they qualify, to renew their permits now, to be safe. In many ways, dreamers are forced to live life on the ballot, but without a vote.
I have my Mexican side, and then I have, like, kind of this American version of me. You're not American, you're not fully American, because people don't see you that way, even though you've been here your whole life. Why can I do that? Like, why can I go out and vote and have my voice be heard?
With less than a week now before the election, I turned on the TV from my couch in Brooklyn to watch the Union go top of the league with a 5-0 win versus defending Eastern Conference champions, Toronto FC, and announced themselves as legit contenders for the Supporters Shield and MLS Cup. And in the thick of it all, yep, Mark McKenzie.
Not a doubt, McKenzie! 2-0 Union!
Watching him score and keep the clean sheet, I couldn't help but reflect back to interviewing him through the wind and the masks in the same stadium, not more than a week earlier, as Delaware County residents were casting their votes.
This be my first time voting, you know, it has that much more, you know, seriousness to it. But this is something that shouldn't be a shock, you know. This is something that it should be something regular, you know. We have a huge resource here in the community. We are a light, a beacon, you know, in this area. So there's no reason why this isn't something we can do regularly. You know, for myself, voting for the first time, helping other young guys understand the importance of it.
Mark represents a new wave of young players in North American soccer, pushing people to the polls, and all for different personal reasons.
I'm voting for my future. I'm voting for my son's future. And I'm voting for this country. There are times when I feel like this country kicks me in the face, but I keep getting up again and I believe that we can be better. And so I vote for myself, but I also vote for all of our future.
This line struck me. The idea that as you fill out your ballot, it could be a friend, a loved one, or in the case of someone like Mark, Tamir Rice, whose name he wore on the back of his jersey at the MLS's back tournament in Orlando instead of his own. Tamir, a 12-year-old African-American boy in Cleveland, Ohio, who was carrying a replica toy gun, was killed on November 22, 2014, by Timothy Lohman, a 26-year-old police officer. Tamir, if still here, would be not much younger than Mark, and 18 years old, eligible to vote.
I hope I represented him well, and having been in his shoes, and having, you know, playing with my friends in the street, you know, having water gun fights. That hit home for me.
I asked Teddy about just what to do with these questions or feelings and this perceived tension between taking to the streets and going to the polls.
I feel like if you don't vote, you're not counting yourself. You're doing a disservice to yourself. You matter. You're a person on this planet. You have a voice that's equal to everyone. And it's the only place that we are all equal, right? You can protest all day. But getting across the finish line is finishing it off with a vote.
And for some, like my old teammate and good friend, Dayson Robinson, still being undecided, while complex, simply means that this week, there's still some work to do.
What do you think will ultimately help you to make that decision? And what does that process look like for you?
Yeah. And I know it might be surprising, one way or the other. I looked at, all right, let me see where they stand on each. I keep hearing this from this person and this news outlet, and all right, let me actually see. You know what I mean? Let me actually see what they're talking about. Oh, they did this? Oh, okay. I don't like that. You know? They did this? Okay, I can agree with that. Okay, I mess with that. So, but we'll see.
For me, I filled out the bubbles on my ballot today. And honestly, I couldn't help but think of Ray.
Just looking at, I think sometimes people who have maybe been through struggles themselves or understand what it feels like to be disenfranchised or to be discriminated against are often the ones I see the first in line to step up and speak on behalf of other people or other communities that are not themselves, but are also facing discrimination as well. Do you find that in your life? Because I see you speaking up on behalf of all different types of people.
We, as people, kind of stay in this bubble. If it doesn't affect us, then it's cool. You know, that's all right. Until it actually happens to you or happens to someone very close to you, then you're like, shit, this is real. People go through these struggles day in and day out. Yes, I am a dreamer. And for me, a dreamer is navigating between my American side and my Mexican side and putting it together to be this person that in the future other kids can look at in the communities that I come from and say, look, he did it and so can I. Please vote. Vote for those whose voices are not heard because of a piece of paper. Vote for those who want to vote but can't because it's so hard. They have to work a couple jobs. They cannot take time off. Vote for their own kids and vote for a better future.
Mark, Warren, and I saw this happening in Chester, Pennsylvania, a state that will play a large role in deciding next week's election.
We are in an area where so many are disenfranchised, so many are suppressed. And we see how when you now allow those suppressed voices to the opportunity or the chance to let their voice be heard, how quickly action is taken to deny that. And this is not just in Chester, this is all over, whether it be the state, whether it be the country. And it expresses just how important it is for change to happen. The right to vote is the right to vote. It wouldn't be in place if we didn't want to build a country that ran on a democracy or allowing the people to have their voices heard. But choose wisely and you know, with understanding how important that vote is.
And while I'll openly encourage you to vote, my hope here has not been to persuade or convince you either way, but maybe to leave you with the question I actually never even asked any of the interview subjects. But through their answers, they somehow asked of me, who are you voting for?
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, really nice to meet you.
You as well. You guys have a rest of your day.
All right.
Thank you.
Be safe out there. Yeah,
thank you.
Maybe next week.
Yeah.
See you next week.
Thanks to Michael Milberger and Kyle Green at MLS Digital for their work on the Movement podcast and continued support. Thank you to my producer, Nick Fershaw, for once again helping to craft and give context to this moment in sport. Thank you to Mark, Warren, Dayson, Nico, Teddy, Ray, and Danielle for your honesty, trust, and time. The voter pop-up in Chester is done, but for those who are listening from the four remaining MLS markets where MLS stadiums are either open or will be opening for voting, please help to spread the word. BBVA Stadium, home to the Houston Dynamo and Houston Dash, and the open-air stadium in Harris County we discussed with Nico, will be open to any registered voter in Harris County on Election Day, with hours of operation from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Starting Thursday, October 29th, residents of Ramsey County, home to Minnesota United, can return their ballots for the 2020 election at the Brew Hall at Allianz Field. A curbside option is available on Shields Avenue. Los Angeles County residents can vote in person or drop off vote-by-mail ballots for a five-day period at LAFC's Bank of California Stadium between October 30th and November 3rd. CenturyLink in Seattle has been designated an official voting center in King County and will be open for Election Day, November 3rd. The music in this episode is by T. The Human, as well as Boca Floja and Irv the Villain. Make sure to check them out. That's it for me now, this time from my apartment in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn. Thank you to everyone who has been involved in MLS Unites to Vote.